There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. Doing what we do every day, talking college football. And for our next guest, we're going to talk USC Trojans. We're also going to talk some departing players for the NFL. I think we're going to talk about maybe a Fresno State player. Maybe, but a lot of Southern Cal as well, but there's just too much tasty stuff going on with the draft, and USC's too good of a program. Want to start there from USCfootball.com. It's Ryan Abraham. Ryan, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How you doing?
Oh, nothing but blessed. There's this saying, I remember my dad told me, he's like, you need to learn to take yes for an answer. Are the Chicago Bears going to take yes for an answer? Tell me, like, they're not going to try to figure something out about the first overall pick, right?
No, everything we've seen and heard, it looks like Chicago's going to be there. They were out in force for USC's pro day last week. It just seemed like all signs are pointing to Caleb Williams going to Chicago. I mean, you see what Justin Fields only getting a six-round pick. I mean, they obviously got to take a quarterback. We haven't heard anything. It would be, you know, a really big surprise if they didn't go that way. But everything we've heard is Chicago's going to take Caleb Williams.
So Marshawn Lloyd, in the footprint of our show, is a name that a lot of folks know. What did he become as he was finishing his college career?
He sort of filled in the role of Travis Dye, who transferred in from Oregon the year before, became one of the leaders of the team, and just was able to do everything out of the backfield. I think, you know, one of the unsung heroes. I mean, he got a lot of credit, but I don't think he got enough for what he did for USC's offense last year. We thought he'd do well in the combine and kind of impress scouts, and he's has the potential to be USC's next pick after Caleb Williams. So maybe it's, you know, sometime in the second round or something like that. But I think he could get on a team in the way the NFL uses running backs right now, be, you know, the number two guy and get a lot of carries and catch balls out of the backfield. But he was really impressive in his 1 year at USC.
All right. Well, those are departing players to the league. I apologize. Am I right about this? Did Corey Foreman leave? Is he at Fresno now?
Yeah, he's at Fresno State now, former, I mean, I think 247 had him, like, the number one player in the country. It just never quite worked out. He had one big play 2 years ago against UCLA at interception to kind of seal the game. But outside of that, he just really didn't do much at USC. So we'll see where he's, you know, what happens to him now.
All right, well, let's talk about almost USC players then. Lincoln Riley's collecting five stars like they're stray animals, like you just go along, just pick them up, especially going out of state. And out of state is one thing, but going into Georgia getting five-star D linemen, that doesn't happen. Kirby, like, has fired Tracy Rocker before, I believe, for that happening. Talk about what's going on the recruiting trail and Riley's insistence that they will be better on defense.
Yeah, I think Lincoln Riley has doubled down on, you know, he told people he cares about defense, but we didn't see it. You know, it was a lot of words. Now we're seeing, I think the moves they made in the offseason, Danton Lynn, bringing in Eric Henderson from the Rams was huge. I mean, he's not really worked in college since he was a GA, but he's a natural recruiter. He brings in Aaron Donald last weekend for official visits, and everyone goes crazy. They get a bunch of commitments. And so I think the new staff on the defensive side has really helped, but they've actually became a player in the NIL space. They've just been behind, and we've talked about that before, Chuck. They weren't competitive with, like, the Oregons of the world, and they were just losing guys because of money. And now they've stepped those efforts up. I think the Tennessee lawsuit has helped, because now USC was sort of following what the rules were supposed to be, or everyone thought they were, and now they're like, hey, we can talk to high school players, which their collective wasn't doing before. So I think it's a combination of things, but really, they're getting a lot of momentum now on the recruiting trail. They haven't had it for a while, but it's, you know, getting those five stars from out of state, it's a big deal. I think it's a combination of taking NIL more seriously and then also what the moves they've made on the defensive side of the ball.
Lincoln Riley is not, I mean, he's not a He's not a timid guy in front of the media. Has the recruiting hall. I mean, I think it's three top 100 commitments on defense. Has he gone a little chest out and say, see, I told you it's a new day. It's morning in Los Angeles. Or has he just kind of let the results speak for themselves?
You know, he seems happier, to be honest, Chuck, when we see him in practice. And, it's one of those things. I think he really believed in what Alex Grinch could do, and it just didn't work out. He made the call last year. He could have made a change and got rid of Alex Grinch, did not, and, realized it, sometime during the season, like, this just isn't going to work. And for whatever, something changed. And, to go get, a standing head coach that's won national championships to be your linebacker coach, or, a defensive coordinator come and coach your DBs, Eric, bring in an NFL guy and to coach the defensive line. I think he's made a lot of the right moves. And, D'Anton Lynn has only been a defensive coordinator for 1 year, but he had great results. And I think he just liked what he saw in him. And so far it's been good. So I don't know if he's like puffing his chest out a little bit, but he does seem happier around the practice field, realizing like, okay, we can score a bunch of points. We've always been able to do that. Now can we get some stops? And I think they're getting a lot more confident. The guys are bigger, they're stronger. There's just a whole different, a different mindset around the team right now. And I think it's given him some confidence and making him a little bit happier.
All right, so two quarterbacks. One of them turned the bowl game into the Arena League, and the other one looks like an NBA power forward or something coming in, and he's played a lot of college football already in one season. So this is not as easy to predict sometimes as, oh, we got to transfer a quarterback, it's going to be him. Or is it that easy?
Yeah, so Jaden Maiava comes in from UNLV, Mountain West Freshman of the Year, and I thought he looked really good. From talking to people around that program, they felt he definitely needs to do some growing still, and it would be really tough for him to kind of step in and play for a Big Ten schedule, especially with USC start with LSU, playing Notre Dame, Michigan, all those teams. And there's a lot of confidence in the program around Miller Moss. I just had him on my show last night, and he's been around the program a while. He's a kid that didn't get to play his senior season because of COVID, but threw six touchdowns in that Holiday Bowl game, like you mentioned. I talked to him about this yesterday. Five of those touchdowns were like into the end zone. They weren't like dump offs to a running back that ran it in. I mean, I think he's someone that feels confident in Lincoln Riley's system. I think Lincoln Riley has a lot of confidence in him that maybe he's not going to go as off script as Caleb Williams does, but he's going to run what's out there, and it showed. Louisville's got a really good defense, and he shredded them. So I think around the program that, they're not saying that Miller Moss is going to be QB1, but that's the feeling that we're getting. I think Maiava can push him for sure during this spring. I think he's got a kid that has a lot of upside, mm-hmm. but just knowing what Miller Moss can bring to the program, he showed it in the Holiday Bowl. I would be shocked if he wasn't the starter when they play LSU in Vegas.
And I'm very surprised that I'm going to tell you, in the moment when I saw what was happening, I was like, he's using this bowl game as a pro day. Like, he wants to generate some tape because he's going to be like every other quarterback and then go, get his. And the fact that that's not how it unfolded, that was unusual given the backdrop of where we are in 2024. All right, you give honest opinions about USC and their environment all the time, LA, et cetera. I have talked about potentially magical settings on Saturday night before Christmas, December 21st, a playoff game in a place like Oxford, Mississippi. What about a USC playoff game on December 21st? How's that going to play in LA?
Yeah, I think that would go over pretty well. I mean, this is definitely, it's a pro town, Lakers, Dodgers, all that. Dodgers opening day today, people going crazy. But when you get that kind of atmosphere, when Pete Carroll had it rolling, people come out and the celebrities come out, it's going to be a big deal. If you're hosting a playoff game, that's something I think that the LA fans would take seriously. And you have the USC core fans, but then you got to get like the regular people that want to come around and check a game out. And I think you would get a lot of that attention. So it'd be, you'd be celebrities. There'd be all that stuff that, when you go to a Laker game and they're showing Ryan Gosling in the front row, whatever, all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of thing you would see if USC was hosting a playoff game. They'd get that star-studded thing going, and I think it'd be a lot of fun. A little different than like a college town atmosphere, which would be awesome. Yep. You'd kind of get a little of that big city feel for a playoff game here.
All right. This may, I don't know, maybe you text with Pete Carroll all the time. Maybe you don't know him at all. Just personally, were you surprised that, like, all right, all the jobs got gone and he's unemployed? And will he be coming around the program? Is he on the pay no mind list? Is he a hero? I have no idea where that is.
Yeah, he's still a hero for most. I mean, yeah, for everyone around USC, they bring him up. And I think, you know, I think there's opportunities for him to come around and, you know, probably not be a huge part of the program, but have someone like Lincoln Riley can come. And there's especially some of the events that they're doing with their collective, you know, having him one of the guest speakers would go over extremely well. So I think, you know, he's unemployed. He's going to do his tour. I think he still has a house here in the South Bay where I live. So, you know, he'll be in L.A. So I think if there's any opportunity for them to kind of bring him in and, you know, trot him out there in front of recruits or the team or whatever, I think they would jump at that opportunity.
Get him and Reggie and Snoop and just send them. It's the old days again. Ryan, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chuck.
Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com. I got to tell you, folks, he said, check this pro town, this Dodgers, Lakers. He's right. When it was Reggie Bush in that 33rd franchise, folks, my gosh, it was the biggest party in that town. Place was packed. Snoop was on the sidelines, and boy, was that controversy. How could you have him charged with murder? Was he charged with murder or manslaughter? Was he whatever? Bad role model. Snoop sells hand towels with Martha Stewart now. Like, Snoop sells socks. He sells beer. He's a bad influence. So that it was the party in that town. It was the biggest party. And so I've thought about some of these because they're the one thing. The playoff's horrible. I think it's horrible. Look at all these great games we get. Yeah, look at all the great games we just lost. That game doesn't matter as much anymore. But, like, college football, there was nothing to figure out. Like, it's working everywhere. It's working. Now it's going to really work a lot more in a few places, and then it's not going to work nearly as much in, like, all of these others. But one thing that it will do is the playoff game that Friday night, and then that next Saturday night, there's just all-day hospitality something, and it's the Christmas season anyway, and the Friday and Saturday before Christmas, when it's on, like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, it is already the night on the calendar for social. Can you imagine that social gathering is a playoff game that Ole Miss is hosting? Ole Miss hosts Ohio State. What? Yeah, I know. How about that? Like that. What about USC? How does it go over there? And if they're doing this just on rankings, I mean, there is always the chance. What if Miami is hosting a playoff game? Somehow. I don't know. Just Cam Ward throws for, like, how many yards would he have to throw for? Let's be honest. Cam Ward throws for requisite yards, and the Miami Hurricanes, students don't go to the games when they're in school. Do you know how Heath, do you know how a Miami student can get to the Miami Hurricanes football game? Do you know all this required? Do you know?
Well, I mean, from Coral Gables to that place, a long way. I mean, I assume they have a bus of some sort, from what I've heard.
You have to tell the university, I would like to go. They will send a bus to pick you up. All you have to do is reserve a spot. They'll say, all right, how many of you? We'll have these many buses. That's all I would like to go to the game. Really? We will give you the Vegas treatment. We'll send a town car. We'll give you show tickets, whatever. We will get you to that game. There are no students, and very few take them up on it, obviously. Not enough. Not enough take them up on it.
But because students, if you're going to the game, you want to go to the game on your terms. I mean, I remember going to a Clemson-Georgia game the last time that Georgia played them on campus. They had media members that they didn't have room for, so they put us in the stands. And we had this crew of, like, Clemson sorority girls in front of us. They got there right in time for the game, and by halftime, they were looking to go hook up with guys at some place, and they weren't looking to be there for the full 3.5-hour college football battle.
Waiting for bus 14 to take them back south?
Yeah, that's not what they're digging.
No, all right, and everybody remember, 35 minutes after the final play, you'll be picked up in the orange lot. That's not what no. So they don't go when they're there. They're really not going to go on December 20th or 21st. Like, what's that game going to be like on March 21st in Miami? So there are the magical things. The NCAA has always sworn to us, like, and then March Madness is the one we always point and, you know, question. No, we don't try to create matchups based on past history. And I think it wasn't it like Bobby Knight was going to coach against Indiana or something his first year. So I've always been skeptical of that. Like, folks, you need to go the other way here. You need to decreate matchups. You need to make sure some of these locales, cock an eyebrow. If you think about a Friday night, think about if the game's going to be on Friday night in Fort Lauderdale. Holy smokes. What if you had a playoff game and no one noticed? What the Pac-12 used to have its championship game, I don't know, occasionally with a playoff spot on the line maybe, and it was ignored. They had tarp on the upper deck if you could see it through the fog. So it's something you just need to think about, because I'm thinking about the magical overflowing, we'll remember this night forever sort of thing. And there's the other reason we may remember it for a long time as well. All right, we're going to break. Continue going through hour two next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Talking college football on Chuck Oliver Show, and I appreciate you coming here to do it with us. And I would like to give back, like to provide for all. When I say all, I mean all college football programs, player, everyone concerned with that program. I'm going to make things better right now. Very easy. In fact, college football can take a giant leap forward simply by doing less of something. We can make all football games shorter. We can trim every budget. And we can keep more players healthy. How do we do all of those things? Keep games shorter, trim budgets, and keep players healthier? Give players less equipment to wear. As in, when we're equipping our players from a view safety, and we want you to be able to go out and perform, and we want to protect all of, give players, specifically defensive players, but give players less equipment, not more. And not better equipment, and not thicker equipment, and not equipment that withstands more impact. None. Take equipment off of the players, and you will achieve all of those things, because they all unfold from the same. The lack of an outcome is, let's stop having so many players get injured. How do we keep players from getting injured, which means we don't stop the game as much, which means we don't spend as much on medical attention, all of this other stuff? Give them less equipment. What I'm saying is, if it hurts the guy making the hit, he didn't hit as hard. And if I see a story on the crawl, for instance, guy dies in the ring, and that's all. Guy dies in the ring. Folks, it's a boxing ring virtually every time. It's not an MMA ring. It's not the octagon. It's not a fight in a Miami Taco Bell parking lot. Guy dies in the ring, it's a boxing ring, because in every one of those other settings, the antagonist feels it as well. In boxing, I invite anyone to do this. If you ever are around a heavy bag, y'all know what the heavy bag is. Lightly, like, make a fist and just lightly jab a heavy bag. It has all the properties of a sack of cement. You don't want to do much more than lightly tap a heavy bag, or you likely will hurt your wrist first, then your knuckles, then the fingers themselves. All right, put on a pair of 16-ounce gloves. Pop, pop, pop. Defensive players today, folks, making any reasonably safe tackle, they don't hurt themselves. They lay lumber to the other guy, and they feel almost nothing on their end, not in the moment at least. You would have fewer stoppages for injury and targeting. You'd have less money spent on equipment and medical attention, and dudes don't get hurt as much. start taking equipment off the players, and I promise you, we'll start some, and we go the other way. We want even more equipment on them. No, no, we need to go the other, actually the opposite way. Heath, what's going on?
So FSU and the ACC continue to go back and forth legally. Neither you and I are attorneys, so who knows? But there is someone who has weighed in that is an attorney that I thought was kind of interesting on this. Warchant, for what it's worth, is noting that there's a little bit of a change in FSU's language in the latest filing that they made that makes it sound like they're saying when we leave, not if we leave, that they're just saying when we leave. Others are debating whether or not that's just process language and means anything. But for what it's worth, Jack Swarbrick has an opinion on this as part of an interview he did with CBS Sports, not specifically about it, but about college in general. Swarbrick is unique in that he is someone who, by virtue of being an ACC athletics director for everything but football, he knows all the ins and outs of the grant of rights. Remember, the grant of rights is not available for just average Joe Public to have seen.
Nope.
He has seen it. He knows the details. And Swarbrick is an attorney by trade before he became Notre Dame's AD. So his opinion on the subject, probably a little more educated than your average guy. Swarbrick, quote, "I don't see the catalyst right now. The Big Ten and SEC have the assets they need to position themselves for their next media negotiation. I understand the ACC has disgruntled members, but I'm not sure there are better options for them. The ACC's legal position is a very strong one." Now, again, maybe he's just doing a favor for Jim Phillips by saying that publicly. Maybe it's what he absolutely 100% believes. You never know. But that's somebody who's as well qualified to weigh in on this legal document as anybody could possibly be, being an administrator and an attorney. And he's saying the ACC's legal position is a very strong one, and he does not have a direct stake in the fight because, again, he's retired. So whatever happens, not his problem going forward. I would say if I'm an FSU fan or a Clemson fan who's just convinced because, we're mad and we want out and we really want out, like we're super-duper mad and we want out, I would not be thrilled with that piece of information. That would concern me.
Yeah, always interesting when someone who knows where all the bodies are and really doesn't have an interest one way or the other, like suddenly that person's available for comment. And I guess has Bavakla taken over now? Did that just happen like a week ago or it's about to happen at the end of the month?
Yeah, I think it's like at the spring game becomes official, but for all practical purposes, Swarbrick's out.
Yeah, so he can talk now. And I agree, he is absolutely authority.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Talking college football 2 hours a day. Been doing it for the past decade. 9 states and 60 sticks. Thank y'all for that blessing. If you're looking for high school wide receivers who can run and go get it, Pahokee, Florida is a pretty good place to go. If you're a high school receiver looking for an SEC school where you can flout your wares, folks, they got unbelievable wide receiver talent in Lexington. It's been that way now for a few years, I'll say. Man, the whole focus of there used to be the big blue wall and this running back that was just going to bludgeon you over the course of 3 hours. they still want to do that, I swear. But, man, they got good-looking young talent on the perimeter, and they got another freshman coming in. We're going to talk about all things with Kentucky football on the field and off. I want to welcome on right now from the Cat's Paws. It's a 247 Pursuit. It's Aaron Gershon. Aaron, welcome back, man. How you doing?
Appreciate you having me back. Doing pretty well.
I appreciate your time. Let's see. There's a new OC in town, and the freshmen who are early enrollees, everybody there is practicing. Let's just start from that standpoint. Talk Bush Hamden, talk Brock Vandegrift to begin with.
Yeah, so they had to obviously push back the start of spring a little bit with the new hire at OC, something they had to do 2 years ago as well. So they are only – they just finished practice number 5 today. We haven't gotten to go in and see them yet. That's hopefully coming up here before the spring game on the 13th. But from what I've been able to hear and gather from press conferences, it's off to a good start. They're definitely going to be a faster offense this year if the things that they're saying are true. And if you just watch Bush Hamden's offenses at Boise State, at Washington, and when he was calling plays at Missouri the last couple of games of the 2022 season, that's how he operates. A lot of no huddle. A little different from tempo. It's not going to be like Tennessee or Ole Miss, but Kentucky's been maybe the slowest offense in the country the last couple of years. They really struggled to get plays in last year. They did hit some explosives, so if you take those off the board, and I think they scored 5 defensive touchdowns, so their plays per game were skewed a little, but they were just they've been painfully slow the last 2 years. They know they need to speed things up, and that's the sense I get early on them. And then Brock Vandegrift-wise, I've only heard good things so far. I mean, he is going into his first year as a starting quarterback, obviously. This is his job. The quarterback room outside of him consists of Bo Allen, who was here a couple of years ago, transferred. He started at Tarleton State in 22. Last year, transferred to Georgia Southern and kind of got caught up when they changed the rules on one-time transfers, so he had to sit out last year. He's back as a backup, and then Cutter Bowley, depending where you look, a 4- or 3-star freshman quarterback. So it's Brock's job, and I've heard he's managed things pretty well so far.
So it's been a contradiction. You know, Coach Stoops has gone out and gotten OCs that he wanted, and we're going to get the band back together again, and, you know, we're whatever. And so he's gone a couple of different directions with OC, you know, out of need when he's had a guy leave or he's decided to make a change. And they've also gotten the quarterbacks they wanted in the portal, and they've also gotten freaky, fast, athletic guys out of the high school ranks on the perimeter and even from Virginia Tech. Why hasn't it actually equaled, like, 38 a game every Saturday?
I think the first thing is the tempo, to be honest with you. They just it's been a painfully slow developing offense the last couple of years where they're getting plays off with 3, 2, 1 seconds left on the play clock. So they really need to speed things up and operate quicker and not let defenses catch on to them. I'd say in 2022 with Rich Scangarillo, they were also painfully predictable. That didn't help. And then last year was more so the tempo. They hit some explosives every now and then, but they just didn't have enough plays to score those points. So this year, you know, hopefully with Bush Hamden, they'll speed things up. And you're right. There is a lot of talent on the perimeter. I mean, Dane Key, Berrion Brown, as good of a 1-2 punch as there is, in my opinion, in the SEC, or at least up there. You add Jamori Macklin from North Texas. He's not practicing right now due to injury, but I don't expect that to be anything that'll hinder him, you know, when we get to fall camp. He's a guy who had 1,000 yards last year, 11 touchdowns. He's going to make an impact. And then you go down that room. They bring in Fred Ferrier from UAB, who I've heard is having a really good camp. Anthony Brown Stevens, they had high hopes for last year, didn't quite work out as a freshman. He's only a sophomore. Hardly Gilmore, the freshman out of Florida, has had a good camp from what I understand. So there's a lot of depth on the perimeter, and then the running back room with Chip Trainum and some of the young guys, they've got a lot of talent, and they have 4 starters returning on the offensive line. So there aren't many excuses for them this year.
Yeah, Hardly Gilmore is one of the kids that I had been reading about, and they'd said that it's an explosive option, maybe a slot guy, and when you work him off of some of the more veteran guys, that he could be that freshman this year. And I'm saying, well, that's a good recruiting job because he's only a 3-star, kind of a mid-ranked kid.
And he's only 17 years old.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So – So I want to ask you about the big blue wall because, you know, I don't know, Texas A&M, they'll sell you something that says Wrecking Crew on it. And I'm like, no, that's not you anymore. That's just like, that's some guys from before and you still market it.
Yeah.
What is the big blue wall? Is that even a thing now? Because it seems like it's been 100 years since Benny Snell was there.
I know it does. But look, in 2021, they had a great offensive line with Chris Rodriguez. And that group had Luke Fortner, who's the starting center for the Jacksonville Jaguars now. Darian Kennard, who is an All-American. Darryl Rosenthal, who's an All-SEC guy. So they're not – and Eli Cox was a midseason All-American before he got hurt. So they're not too far removed. 2022, they were awful. There's no other way around it. They gave up 47 sacks. And then last year, they were much better in pass protection. They only gave up, I think it was 18 or 19 sacks. But the run blocking was not good enough. I think Ray Davis's numbers could have been even better. And he still ran for 1,000 yards. So, you know, they're going to find a way to run the football. Bush Hamden's had a 1,000-yard rusher every single year. He's been a play caller. They are emphasizing what I found interesting when talking to Eric Wolford, who's back as the offensive line coach, is they're emphasizing in practice this year running downhill in pads, where the last couple of years it sounds like they've been doing more of the RPO stuff, more passing game in live practice. But this year they're putting an emphasis on going downhill and getting physical. And I like that a lot. And I think with this year's offensive line, there is a lot more depth than there's been the last 2 years, because you bring back you bring back a six-year guy in Eli Cox to play center, a seventh-year guy, to play left tackle in Marcus Cox. You bring back Jagger Burton, add Jalen Farmer at guard. Those are two guys that will compete. Dylan Ray had a nice year last year. They bring in Gerald Mincy, the transfer from Tennessee, and then Cortland Ford, who they brought in last year. He's out for spring with a wrist injury, but he can compete at tackle. They're 8 or 9 deep, and that's really big. So they have the ingredients to have a bounce back year, but we have to see it.
Wrapping up with our Truest reporter for Kentucky from 247 and Believe in Kentucky podcast, it's Aaron Gershon. All right, Mark Stoops, he's always struck me as he's a gentleman and he's an adult and he's mature and all that. If he would have tweeted out something following that Kentucky loss last week about being a football school, I would have understood it. It would have still been wrong, but I would have understood it. Tell me what's going on around campus hoops wise, and because that's the big was $33 million actually a factor in keeping him?
I don't think it was the $33 million. I think it was the added cost. You're gonna have to buy out the assistants and pay you top dollar for your next coach and their staff. So and then they just invested big money on a women's basketball coach in Kenny Brooks. He's gonna be a top 10 paid coach in college women's basketball, and he just took Virginia Tech to the Final Four. They just renovated the women's gym that also hosts volleyball, gymnastics. That was a $52 million expense. So the money wasn't quite there. And I guess when you look at who might have been out there, you know, with Jay Wright retired, and I don't think you're going to pry Danny Hurley or Brad Stevens. Like, the options weren't quite there. And, you know, they decided to make the decision to stick with Coach Cal. But I'll tell you, it is going to be a long off season, and the pressure on next year's team is going to be sky high, because that was a very unfortunate ending. And, you know, they've won 2 postseason games if you combine the NCAA tournament and SEC tournament since COVID. So that's not good enough.
Yeah, you know, just because you've done it before, winning with freshmen, it ain't easy, man. It's just not. So, all right, brother, I appreciate the input, man. Thank you so much.
Anytime, you got it.
All right, talking Kentucky college football, but also a little bit of hoops there, just because it's Calipari and it's a big enough deal that, I mean, it shut down their site. It shut down, like, Kentucky basketball, and gone. Can't talk about it right now. So $33 million, I didn't think that I would get to the point of John Calipari kept his job in part because of the buyout. That's not supposed to be John Calipari. It's not supposed to probably be the Kentucky basketball coach, but I don't know. Every so often, Billy Gillespie gets the job. Tubby, I think they probably did wrong. In the moment, I was like, you did him wrong. As we go on, I'm like, probably did him wrong. But Calipari, and I wasn't, like, I'm not advocating, because I know what Calipari is. Calipari is one of those guys that he's won with a bunch of freshmen several times. I don't know, when one of them's Anthony Davis, you know, it's a thumb on the scale, isn't it? And because of the system that's set up, he's kind of leaned into that whole thing. I feel my freshman team's on the floor. I don't know, man. Candle's burning. Don't hug the wick. Don't make it your brand. Heck yeah, five more freshmen. So it just it's a difficult path, and he's done it before, and that's kind of what has undid him this year to some extent. But $33 million shouldn't be the reason you keep him. He's an outstanding coach. He's one of the best coaches. Run your program, and you know what's going to happen every single season. And he is the second highest. Either he or Self is the highest paid coach. And then it's the Auburn and Bama coach, or third and fourth. And then you go on from there. But, no, coaching was not the issue. And Kentucky flipping the basketball coach, that would have been a reactionary to an angry first-round exit. You have a national championship coach at a national championship program there. You would have been piling up like literally close to $40 million in total and then still had to go out and hire somebody new. So, and all that just because you had a horrid result in the first round. All right, we're going to break and gosh, look at the clock. We'll wrap up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Sure, it was 3 years ago. We had really hardly any kids, you know, dealing with NIL. There was portal, but there wasn't a combination of both. And it's changed really fast. I mean, it's just like rapid pace fast because now almost every kid's on some form of NIL. I mean, you got less walk-ons because kids are coming to school on NIL, and it's wild.
Kirby Smart talking with WCNN 680 The Fan in Atlanta yesterday about name, image, likeness, and how quickly it has changed. And he's right about that. And Lane Kiffin has been very transparent on both aspects of name, image, likeness as it relates to him. He says it's an awful system. And I understand it's putting money in kids' pockets, he says, but it actually, in a lot of ways, it's bad for the kids. And he went through and he explained it. And he's right. Not one provocative word came out of Lane's mouth. But Lane says it's a pretty bad system. It's awful. And here's how it's actually bad for everybody involved. And then he says, but since it's the system, we're going to participate in it. We had Ryan Abraham on, USCfootball.com. He runs the thing. He knows all about it. If Ryan tells you something about Trojan football, well, it's accurate. And he said that with USC getting like multiple five-star commitments from high school kids over the last week and a half, they've gotten three commitments from ESPN top 100 recruits just on defense. And part of what Lincoln Riley's saying is, hey, we finally got our name, image, likeness kind of squared away. We're now doing this the correct way, and you'll start to see the results now, I promise you. And then, boom, you start seeing the results. Ryan said, part of the issue was when name, image, likeness started in July 2021, Southern Cal tried to kind of go along by what the NCAA said were the guidelines. Now that they realize there are no guidelines, all right, well, now we're going to start getting some players. Folks, there are programs in D1, like programs that we kind of care about still in D1, that don't have their name, image, likeness efforts rounded out yet. Ole Miss does. If we go back, like pre-COVID, everything was equal. Man, Ole Miss had to punch up. They had to make up ground. And you know how you make up ground? You get a guy like Eli Manning as your quarterback. All right, that's how you get Patrick Willis. You make up some ground. When name, image, likeness came, and there were programs like Southern Cal saying, we will abide by the rules, Ole Miss was wise enough, and I mean that, wise enough to realize there are no rules here. you can't reward play on the field with additional name, image, likeness pay. They're like, all right, well, we just decided that, you know what, we're looking for a 6'2 kid with brown hair who's a left-handed quarterback, and we found one for our ad. So it had nothing to do with the four touchdowns on Saturday. And prove it. So the NCAA tried to, and then they got bopped on the nose, and then Tennessee and Virginia, the state capital, got involved, and the NCAA is like, all right, palms up, we out. Lane Kiffin's right, and his first thing is like, this is a horrible system. New statement, we're going to do our absolute best to succeed with the current system. And that means spreading money around like butter. So as long as we can afford it, we're doing it. And so he's right at both ends of those. This is what matters to me today, brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. Heath, how's the Thursday?
So a couple of things off of what you were just talking about, Chuck. I was reading a piece earlier about Michigan and about Michigan feeling that they're behind. And Michigan's AD is still saying publicly, we are not going to use NIL as inducements. Like, he's still at least maintaining for the public that they're not going to do it that way. We'll see. But in conjunction with that, I have no idea how important this guy is, because none of us behind the scenes trying to know, you know, exactly who does what in some of these programs, it's hard to say. But Michigan yesterday hired John Collins as assistant director of recruiting, coming from Georgia. That is interesting to me. Last year, you remember, there was a lot of focus on the idea that Harbaugh had a beat Georgia period. We will never know whether or not the beat Georgia period would have worked, because, of course, they didn't ever get a chance to play Georgia on their way to winning the championship. But now you've got Sherrone Moore saying, let me get somebody who understands how Kirby's doing this. Let me get somebody who's been a part of that machine. And the thing that I'm interested in, Chuck, is he doing it because he wants to understand how they've been able to land such top talent consistently? Or is he trying to get the evaluation piece? Because that's the one thing with Georgia. It's not that every kid that Georgia signs works out. Nobody has that happen. You know, injuries, homesick, stuff happens. But Georgia has done so well. I mean, you look at the number of guys. They don't sign a bunch of three stars, but, man, the ones they do, they normally hit on. Bear Alexander stands out as being unusual, as being somebody who maybe was not a cultural fit when they brought him in from Texas and left. And that was the word was, yeah, you know what, talented kid, but not a fit. Mm. They seem to know how to find guys like a Brock Vandegrift. Never did a thing for them, but Brock Vandegrift stuck around extra time, wanted to be a part of that. A Gunnar Stockton, who probably could already be a starter had he stayed with his original commitment to South Carolina. You have him in there willing to sit 2-3 years in some cases. Now, I'm curious to see, and maybe we'll never know publicly, which piece of the Georgia experience Michigan's looking for. Is it the evaluation piece, or is it the whatever the secret sauce is, tell me what it is, because we need to know here in Michigan because we're behind?
Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that, and there's obviously exceptions as well. But, you know, Georgia, like everybody, has transfers. Most of theirs are the variety of, I haven't played yet, I want my turn. But they also have a lot of guys in that category who were supposed to transfer and they just didn't. I think Dejon Edwards is going to be an NFL player. And he was supposed to have left, because as a freshman, it wasn't just, well, he's like fifth or sixth on the depth chart or whatever. There was a thought that he was already segmented into a role on the team, which was, hey, we're the Georgia Bulldogs, which means a lot of Saturdays we're going to have a lead in the fourth quarter. And this freshman running back, he's going to be our ground and pound. He's going to be, we got the ball with 6:03 left, and you're not going to get possession back. Like, that was what we thought. It was going to be Dejon. They're training him for that role, because he did it a couple of times at the end of the season against maybe Missouri or South Carolina. So we thought that's what it was. And there were other guys on the roster that were older and better, and there were bigger recruits on the way, and there was even a guy there with him, Kendall Milton. And so just all of this stuff, and you looked at Dejon going into second year, and you're like, of the people who are coming in right now, of the people who are still ahead, I was like, he's just going to plug along, but he's got to transfer. He's going to go through a spring and not win the job. and transfer, and then he didn't. And he stayed, and he stayed, and then he played his final season at Georgia, and now he's going to be an NFL player. So there are a lot of examples of those kids who have done that with him.
There are. And look, in the case of Michigan, Michigan's recruiting under Harbaugh never did for all the attention that they got at the beginning. With, oh, he's doing these camps in the South. He's going to grab all the Southern kids and bring them up to Ann Arbor.
Slumber party.
He stayed over at the kid's house. All this talk. It never really translated into consistent top five, top seven recruiting. Sharon Moore, I have no idea, as a head coach, when he has to run the whole show, it's his philosophy, not Harbaugh's, how he will do with that. But there's a lot of meat on the bone for them to improve their recruiting. The raw talent bringing them in, they could do better than they have by a wide margin.
I say worst moment, it's relative. Climbing the tree or the shirts and skins football game?
Probably the skins, That picture of that was one pasty looking man for a football coach spending as much time outside as he does.
Yeah, can't get that. That had to be it. Climbing the tree was the injury factor, the copay, which he probably could cover, you imagine. But that picture wraps it up on a Thursday. Back tomorrow with more.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.